I'm not going to tell the story the way it happened. I'm going to tell it the way I remember it. Through this line, we are introduced to Alfonso Cuarón's modern adaptation of Charles Dickens' original tale, Great Expectations.
For those who are not familiar, the movie follows a classic love story where we watch our main character, Finn.
Well, maybe rather watch through Finn?
Interesting. Yes, maybe we watch through Finn. Pip, in the original novel, played by Ethan Hawke, grow up to fall in love with Estella, a star in her own right, played by Gwyneth Paltrow. There is almost a forbidden love between the two.
Definitely. Forbidden love. For those modern listeners, think of a John B. and Sarah Cameron situation from The Outer Banks. It's honestly eerily similar.
Well, that's one way to put it. But I think it's important to mention that Cuarón still maintains the important rags-to-riches tale that was present in Dickens' original work.
Yes, that's definitely true. I think you can see that Cuarón transports the plot of the story, originally taking place in London, into a modern American landscape. And in doing so, he adopts contemporary struggles and conflict. We see the role of socioeconomic class structure creep into the story, driving our main character, Finn.
Moreover, Cuarón is able to explore the story of one's drive for fame and success in the context of America. Hello, everybody, and welcome. We're your hosts, Betsy Blitch
and Michael Greenstein,
and we are so excited to have you for today's episode of The Cin-American Dream.
Up next, we dive deep into Alfonso Cuarón's 1998 adaptation of Great Expectations, where we hope to explore the interwoven storylines of a romantic love affair and a coming-of-age rags-to-riches story in the context of late 20th century America.
Through a discussion of soundtracks and music, stylistic cinematic elements, and recurring motifs, we hope to tease apart if these two greater themes of romance versus coming of age complement one another, or if they really are at odds. So, let's talk about the big question here. Does this movie center around a love story between Finn and Estella, or is it about Finn chasing the American dream, a classic rags-to-riches tale?
Well, yes for both, I guess. I think that's exactly the right question. In fact, we see that different elements in the film actually tend to contrast one another as to which central theme they support.
Interesting. Perhaps, though, before we should get into analysis just yet, we should catch everyone up to speed with the gist of the plot here.
I agree. I think that's a good idea. So, the movie begins, and we are plopped right into the Florida Gulf Coast, where we first meet our protagonist, Finn Bell, a young orphan boy who is under the care of his older sister, Maggie, and her boyfriend, Joe. The three of them live in a small fisherman's town, and we quickly are oriented to their poor lifestyle.
Meanwhile, we have Miss Dinsmore, the richest lady in town, living just down the street with her beautiful niece, Estella.
Yes, this is true. So Finn and Estella's paths first cross when Joe, the local handyman, is called to Miss Dinsmore's estate and drags Finn along. Finn is immediately struck when he first sees Estella.
Following this first encounter, we see that this relationship prospers as the two grow up with each other.
And then conflict approaches. Estella begins to embody the idea of the wicked view of love that her aunt so desperately tried to instill in her as she leaves for boarding school abroad without saying goodbye to Finn after high school.
Yet, we see the young adult deal with the disappointment by casting aside his pursuit of Estella and explore another passion, his art.
Yes, let's not forget that before Finn meets Estella, he's deeply in love with drawing and his artwork himself. So the pursuit of economic success begins as he uses his talents as a means to take him to the Big Apple to open up a gallery all of his own.
But our love story doesn't just abruptly end. In fact, Finn runs into Estella once more in New York City.
Just after the reunion, Estella tells Finn that another man has proposed to her, and she's going to say yes. A true heartbreaker.
So we have Finn, where he's reached the pinnacle of success in the art world. He has made it to New York City and presents his own gallery, but he still can't find happiness.
Alas, Finn spends some time traveling the world and exploring his material success, but ends up returning to his initial hometown.
And we end with, whether the act of fate or nostalgia, he is driven to visit Miss Dinsmore's house once more, where he finds Estella, all grown up, divorced, and with a daughter of her own.
And they live happily ever after?
Well, I think we'll leave that for the listeners to truly decide. Okay, so to begin talking about this question of what the movie is really about, let's dive into the part of the film that most viewers don't automatically think about. The soundtrack.
I think that's a great idea, Betsy. And when I think about the soundtrack in the movie, there's one scene that really comes to mind, and it's also one of my favorite scenes. It was when Estella was modeling for Finn and his artwork after reconnecting in New York, and I have to say, it felt like as she was stripping and modeling, Finn only started drawing faster and faster, and this was mimicked as the music got louder and louder and more intense. It was such a great scene.
I also loved this part in the film. With the combination of Estella posing and smiling for Finn, the light coming in through the windows, and the fast-paced soundtrack, it's hard not to be as enthralled with Estella as Finn is. In fact, the lyrics of this song are super interesting and touch on this theme of Finn's love story as well.
Really? So what are the lyrics?
Well, some notable lines include, "You are the habit I can't seem to kick. Like a car crash I can see, but I just can't avoid." And then, later on it says, "When you smile like a friend, oh, and I'll come running just to do it again."
Wow. That's really interesting, actually, you say that, because in this scene, it feels like this is the ultimate setup for a love story, right? We see how fast Finn starts drawing and how obsessed he really is with Estella, but yet these lyrics seem to kind of question that.
Exactly. And I think this touches on the greater theme of our whole discussion. It's almost as if every time we start thinking about this as a love story, Quran drops a subtle hint in one way or another to argue against this. In this critical scene of our film, the lyrics of a car crash and bad habit make it seem like Finn is just chasing after false hope here. And on top of that, I have to say, if you look at the titles themselves of the soundtrack as a whole, it gets even more interesting.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, there's the repeated song titled Bésame Mucho, played off and on throughout the whole film. Bésame Mucho means kiss me lots in Spanish. We see this when the two are dancing, especially when they're growing up. But then, at the same time, this hinted love story song is interwoven with song titles of Let It Go, Wishful Thinking, Walk This Earth Alone, and Success.
Well, I mean, that leaves you thinking, like, do you think Quran did this on purpose?
Absolutely. The soundtrack here tips the scale, making me think Quran's main message is more geared towards vocational success. It almost feels like Finn is chasing after an intangible dream of being with Estella. On one hand, while he wants her to besame mucho, he also knows at the end of the day, he needs to let it go, as it was just wishful thinking, and that he will end up walking this earth alone, all of which titles of soundtracks in the film.
I gotta say, I think you're absolutely right, Betsy, and your analysis, it's so interesting because I feel like other parts of the film argue an entirely different message.
Okay, so what do you mean with that?
Well, take for instance the beginning of the film. You know, quite literally, we are oriented to the plot by looking through the camera at eye level with Finn.
So, are you saying the viewer sees what Finn sees?
Well, I think it's even more than that. I think that the camera helps the viewer almost feel what Finn is feeling.
I'm interested.
Right, and our faded introduction of the two lovers, when Finn first lays eyes upon Estella, there's this love at first sight moment, and it's furthered through the camera work. We see the dazzling and instant infatuation that Finn experiences is mimicked in the circling and swirling of the camera.
I remember that, actually. It was almost dizzying, if I think about it.
Exactly, and I think a lot of other people happen to agree, and in that one critic, Michael K. Johnson, alludes to this meeting as an establishing moment of the love story arc. he points out Cuarón's masterful usage of cinematics and how it helps establish the Edenic setting and the exact meeting when these two characters first laid eyes upon each other.
Yes, actually, now that I think about it, we do see that these characters are, in a way, Adam and Eve, who are discovering love in this exact instance.
I completely agree, and I think that Cuarón is extremely purposeful in this directing. Nothing is an accident or happenstance, and especially when it comes to the camera focus.
So then, what do you think is his purpose?
Back to that question again. You know, after watching this and thinking about the camera focus, my interpretation is that the camera follows Finn's true love and temptations. It reacts to Finn's feelings, even those unspoken. In effect, it reveals that Estella is Finn's real desire, and the love story is the main focus of the film.
All right, so but where exactly is this supported in the film?
So there are two main film style elements that I found extremely interesting and relevant when considering this question. The camera tilt and the shot, reverse, jump, and then shot.
I definitely remember the camera tilt, but you're going to have to elaborate a little further there.
Of course, of course. So, for example, early on in the film, following the initial meeting of Finn and Estella, there is this moment of innocence of the two discovering lust, and it's the first kiss.
I loved this scene.
Yeah, I agree. It was very much so a beautiful scene. And at this moment, we have our first camera tilt. You almost have to turn your head to see the scene in its proper orientation. I think this is quite literally our first tilt for the characters, the moment they initially give in to desire. And interestingly, we see this throughout the film, at all stages of development between the characters. For example, before Estella leaves for boarding school, the two indulge in this moment of sexual exploration, and once again, the camera tilt returns.
I also remember that scene. It's weird, though, because it seemed like Estella quickly pulled back, almost as if she was trying to resist the temptation.
Yeah, I happen to agree, and I began to refine my theory a little bit of the camera tilt at that moment. And while it resembles, I believe, temptation, I also think the camera tilt expresses the division between Finn's and Estella's feelings. So while Finn viewed the moment as love, wanting Estella to stay, we see that Estella found the interaction purely physical.
Okay, that is cool.
I agree. And now, when you couple this with the idea of the shot reverse shot style of filming, you find something very intriguing. For instance, during the scene discussed prior, when Finn is drawing Estella in his New York City apartment, the popular stripping scene with the enthralling music, we see the camera work constantly jump between Finn's view of Estella and then his depiction of her in his artwork.
That's a good point. I also remember the constant back and forth.
Yes, and through this jump, reverse, back and forth, Finn's view of the world becomes illuminated. It's so cool. It's almost like we're getting transported into Finn's head, and we see the juxtaposition between what he sees and then what he perceives through his artwork.
So maybe the camera work is comparing what Finn sees and what he wants to see?
Yes, I think that is an excellent way to put it, Betsy. So what he wants to see is this flawless Estella, right? His depictions of her highlight her perfection and reflect his desire for her.
Okay, so while the soundtrack underpins Finn's drive for material success and socioeconomic advance, the camera work hints at the fact that perhaps Finn's true desire is Estella, the love story element.
I agree, but where does that leave us?
Well, I think our analysis would be incomplete without an acknowledgement and exploration of Finn's artwork.
I agree. His artwork rests at the intersection of these two competing storylines, his love for Estella and his pursuit of a respected career as an artist in New York City.
Oh, absolutely. All the way from the beginning, when Finn draws Estella at Miss Dinsmore's house, to his gallery in New York, this movie centers around Finn and his artwork. In a way, I almost feel like Finn is drawing what he wants as a way to bring it into fruition.
That's interesting you say that, because on one hand, we can look at Finn's artwork as the means that gets him to New York City, the pinnacle of success. And yet, at the same time, guess who he's drawing?
Estella. So, Getting back to it, one thing I repeatedly read through critics' analyses is that Finn reveals his internal hopes and desires to the audience through the artwork itself. Even just looking at the color palette he uses as well, everything he draws is in complete black after Estella tells him she is married to another man. Before, it was all red.
That makes sense to me. Perhaps Finn uses his art as a mechanism to try and manifest his hopes and desires.
Yes, if you think about it, he is drawing sketches of both Estella and these repeated fish. I have to say, I was initially pretty confused by what the drawings of fish could mean to us as viewers, but I think it's really Finn's way of telling us how he is pining after the fame, girl, and money, all at the same time. In the beginning, Finn is fishing for a purpose, no pun intended there, which we see reflected in the fish artwork. And then as the movie progresses and Finn makes it to New York, he seems to stop drawing as many fish and instead focuses on what he doesn't yet have, the beautiful girl of his dreams, Estella.
Yet while achieving success in his artwork, he is still searching for a deeper satisfaction.
Exactly. And one last thing, I would be remiss not to mention what I deem the most important drawing in the movie. Right when we think that Finn has really made it big, his gallery is sold out, he's in New York, and his art is crushing it. He looks at his childhood sketchbook to see a drawing of a fishing line cast on to an empty heart in the water.
Well, how about that?
This image essentially captures the whole film and subtly may answer the question, what is more important to live a fulfilled life? Is it economic success or is it love?
And do we think that both are achievable?
From our analysis of the soundtrack, camera work, and the art motif, it seems that Finn resolves to find happiness in his love for Estella. Quite literally, the movie closes by optimistically suggesting the two individuals might actually end up together.
Doesn't this conclusion feel a little too fantastical and unrealistic, Betsy? I mean, not to say that love is not important, because it definitely is, but this sentiment seems kind of forced.
Well, I agree with you, Michael, but at the same time, the whole film has these competing forces of economic drive versus a love story. And in the end, I have to say, I think it's the love story that wins out.
But I would go as far as to say that we end with the suggestion that the American dream, which Finn chases and I'd say rightfully achieves, especially with his move to New York City, is not satisfying with an empty heart.
The weird thing is that this ending strongly contrasts the preconceived notions of the American dream that we have talked about previously this semester. It's almost as if there is a satirical undertone arguing that even when one achieves this socioeconomic mobility, happiness is not necessarily guaranteed, thus poking fun at the mechanisms that entrench people in America.
I agree. Moreover, it's important to mention that this ending contrasts with Dickens' original novel, in which the characters never cross paths again.
It's interesting you bring this up, because I think that Cuarón landed on this resolution as more of a reflection of the sentiment of the time, rather than the validity of the claim. Perhaps his message was meant to be one of happiness for many disillusioned viewers at the time of the film's conception. For example, one critic in particular, Leslie Holt, argues a similar point. Holt reminds us that the 1998 film was intended for the audience of Generation X, essentially our parents' generation who grew up during the 70s and 80s. Their time was marked by peaks in divorce rates, drug use, and alcohol consumption.
Interesting. So maybe Holt's point is perhaps Cuarón adds his own ending twist as a means of providing a disillusioned audience with some semblance of hope.
Yes, and I think that sentiment of disillusionment is one that many of us as Duke students can relate to at the moment.
Betsy, I completely agree. You know what? Maybe we all need a little bit of Cuarón's intervention in our lives to provide some artificial hope at this moment.
Fair enough. I'm also curious to see how films made during the next few years reflect our current sentiment and situation.
Well, you know what? Lucky for all you viewers out there, you know we will be here to hash it out.
Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in today for another episode of the Cinemerican Dream. I'm Betsy Blitch.
And I'm Michael Greenstein. And thank you for tuning in.